You're listening to the Riverfront Church broadcast, a place to explore faith, history, ideas, and more.
Hello, I'm Pastor Edwin.
I'm Pastor Emma.
And we are here with a very special guest, the moderator, dun dun dun, of the PCUSA, that's Presbyterian Church, United States of America. And this is Cindy Coleman. She's a co-moderator. Welcome.
Thank you.
Glad to have you here. And this is another edition of the Riverfront Church podcast. So we've had all sorts of guests on this podcast. We've had rabbis. We've had people in film and in music. We've had people just talking about their own faith journey and their own healing journey. We've had people who have no faith or are trying to figure out their faith and have talked about their experience of forgiveness and their wounds with the church. So we've gotten a lot of different perspectives, a lot of feedback. So I've really enjoyed being a part of this and continuing to do this. So we have some questions for you because you're sort of one of our more unique guests that we've had. The reason is because you have a pretty large public role, pretty large profile, and we're going to ask you a bunch of questions about your faith and your role and what sort of you see for the future of the denomination and denominations in general. That's something Riverfront Church cares about. I remember when we were first starting off in 2015, we would go around inviting people, hey, we want to start a new church. Would you like to be a part of it? And one of the first questions people would ask is what's the denomination? And we said, well, I'm a Presbyterian pastor, and it's a Presbyterian church plant, but it's really sort of a non-denominational worship, though it's governed by the Presbyterian church. I said it much more briefly. I had my elevator speech. But they were like, oh, okay, good. And I was very surprised by that because I thought the question, coming from denominations myself, I thought the question was going to be like, you know, are you Baptist? Because that's what I am, or da-da-da. And they were like, I'd say 6 out of 10 people were saying, oh, good. Yeah, oh, good, there isn't a denomination that I have to subscribe to. So that says a lot. And so we really care about that. We care about seekers. We care about the nuns and the duns and the left outs and the who's in and who's out kind of thing. So we're going to ask you about that. But first, let's just start off with some basic things. So tell us a little bit about Cindy Coleman.
All right. Well, it's great to be here. Have fun. Woo! So a little bit about me. I live in Massachusetts and have now for 14 years, but I'm not from Massachusetts. My dad was career military, so I am not from really anywhere. But this is the longest I've lived in one place my entire life, 14 years.
Wow.
It's feels odd, but also good. I have been a pastor now for 20 years. In fact, today, November 17th, is my 20th ordination anniversary.
Oh,
yay!
Congratulations!
Woo!
Yeah. Those are our studio effects. We've got an increased budget as of yesterday. So,
all right. I see the applause cards. Well, and it's my first podcast.
Yes.
So.
Yes.
Took me 20 years to get here. Yeah. So it's been a lot of fun. It's not been what I thought it was going to be, which probably I can get amens from the rest of the people around the circle.
Yes, Jesus.
Yeah, not at all what I thought being a pastor would be, but I can't imagine doing anything else. In fact, the only thing I remember about the orientation to seminary, to the graduate school time, was one of the professors standing up in the welcome and saying, if you can do anything else in the world and be happy, go do it. That's all I remember.
I heard that in seminary, too.
Okay, so
really?
Not just our seminary.
No, I didn't. Oh. I heard it later on in life.
Okay. Yeah, well, I can't imagine
doing
anything else. Mm. Yeah, yeah. So I've pastored 2 different churches, one in Ohio, one in Massachusetts, and currently, in addition to serving as co-moderator, which is a 2-year term, I serve at the regional level. So we call that a presbyter. Other denominations call that a bishop. We don't have any of the power of a bishop. but basically, in the regional level of New England, My region particularly is Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, and Eastern Massachusetts, just a little slice of real estate. I provide leadership and guidance for all of the congregations and ministries and ministers in that area. Mm. You know, that's my day job.
Yeah. So for hearers, so we have several hearers who are Presbyterian or grew up Presbyterian, or at least familiar in some way for Presbyterian. But even they might need a refresher course. And for those who aren't Presbyterian, they might go, Presbyter, Presbyterian, moderator, what does that all mean? So give us a little bit about what does that mean?
Mm-hmm. Well, how geeky do you want it to be?
As geeky as you want to be.
So for those who are super geeky and want to know about words, the word presbyter, of course, I'm saying of course to the pastors sitting here with me, comes from the Greek, and it means elder. And not elder as in old in age, but elder as in wise and a leader. So for us, that is the heart of who we are. We are a church that is governed by and led by elders, people elected by our congregations, very democratic in process. And in fact, we pride ourselves on being part of the reason why America is based on a democratic form of government, because Presbyterians were part of those initial conversations. What should it look like for these states to be gathered? Mm. And so for our national offices, the leaders are elected. Now we meet every 2 years in what we call a General Assembly. So, you know, Presbyterians from across the United States are elected from their regional bodies to serve as commissioners. Those commissioners come together and they vote. They make decisions. They argue about what should the church say about homelessness? What should the church say about same-gender relationships? What should the church say about health care and access to affordable health care? What should the church say about Jesus? We argue about that too. So we talk a lot about both social issues and also internal church issues. And our decisions are made by the body voting. And one of the big decisions that's made right at the beginning of that assembly is who will be our leaders for the next 2 years until the next time the General Assembly gathers. So it's similar to running for public office, except it's in the church. So we use different language, of course. We have to use different language. We call it standing for the office, not running. We don't have a political campaign. We discern the will of God. But it looks pretty similar, to be honest. And so at the beginning of General Assembly, the people who are seeking to be elected as moderator have a stump speech, question and answer period, and then the commissioners vote. It takes more than 50% of the vote. It's not simple majority. So in our case, it took 4 ballots.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It was where the people who are standing for the office are behind the curtain, kind of like the Wizard of Oz, paying no attention to the man. Yeah, we're behind the curtain while the commissioners are all voting, so we can't see what's going on. We can hear the current moderators, you know, moderating the election. But, yeah, just have to wait until a decision's made. Mm-hmm. So it was a really interesting time.
Excited. I'm a Presbyterian minister commissioner next year.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. You can edit that part out. I'm just like, oh, my gosh, I got to do that.
It's fun.
Have you ever done that before? So have you ever been a commissioner before?
No.
So this is your first
really
time.
It's really cool.
And you're excited.
Oh, it's so amazing to be in that room and the energy and
super bantering time. Like, so I'm like, and I was there. I was an overture advocate last year, so okay. I was in the room, but I didn't have voice or vote. And for people, if we leave this part in, that's sort of like a, what's the word?
An observer.
Yeah. And I got to speak on one cause for 2 minutes, and that's all I got to say the whole time, but I got to watch all the other happenings. So super.
And for our listeners, what's an overture?
An overture are the things that come through that make changes to our governance, our the documents that we have that say what we believe. Mm-hmm. And so the overture that I was supporting was to add a letter to the Book of Confessions paired with the Confession of Belhar to say, this is like super nerdy Presbyterian, but that confession was very important because it was the first really non-Eurocentric one. And there's a letter that goes with each one of them to say, this is the original context. So what I advocated for, that was the word I was looking for, was to put an American letter with that to say, mm-hmm. we don't want to take your story away from you, but we want to say this is still relevant to us and this is still worth saying to Gay and
yeah.
Pass. And I was so excited. So anyway, you can take like all of that out.
And so 2-year terms?
Yes, it's a 2-year term. So it's from assembly to assembly.
And are there term limits? Is it one term? Or
so the way our policy, our government works is you have to be elected as a commissioner to hold an office, to hold the office of moderator. And so you're usually only elected once. You know, some people are elected multiple times because of demographic stuff, but I don't expect I'll ever be elected as a commissioner again. It's also because it's a volunteer position, the presbyteries that I've been serving now for a while, they agree to keep paying me. So even though I'm gone half the time, they continue to pay my salary. And I don't think they would agree to do that for another 2 years.
and then your co-moderator. So what? How does that happen?
We used to have the moderator, vice moderator, like president, vice president. The moderator is elected and then chooses the running mate, kind of thing. But 2 years ago in 2016, we elected our first co-moderators. Because our assemblies are every other year, it made sense to have two people serving in equal position with equal authority. So, for instance, I'm sitting here because the office of the moderator received an invitation from a church in this presbytery saying, we'd like the moderator to come celebrate our anniversary. Previously, what happened was the moderator's not available. Would you be willing to receive the vice moderator? Now, we're co-moderators, so we're equal in office. And the other piece of that is you decide to stand for the office together. So when we announced our intention to stand, it was a joint announcement. And that will happen, I expect. I know of a pair that's intending to stand, and I think their announcement will come soon. The title is co-moderators of the 223rd General Assembly, because that's the assembly we were elected at and the assembly we moderated. Part of our mandate is to interpret the actions of the General Assembly. And part of the stricture, part of the boundary is if the Presbyterian Church has not spoken on something, we don't necessarily have the freedom mm-hmm. to share our own opinions. That doesn't stop us from doing it. Mm-hmm. But for instance, when the church was really struggling over the issue of whether or not to ordain LGBTQ people, moderators who were very much in favor of full inclusion were instructed, the church has not spoken on this, you cannot use the office to advocate for this. You're in the office as a representative for who we have said we are. The freedom now is that we have said that we are fully welcoming, that we are open and inclusive, that we have chosen love and we choose welcome. We have taken stances on so many social issues that there's hardly anything that we haven't voiced some kind of opinion on. Some things are more difficult or sensitive than others, like issues with Israel and Palestine. That's a difficult issue for us as a church. We support our Jewish brothers and sisters, but we also say that the treatment of people in Palestine is not what God would desire. And so it's a fine line, and we've struggled with how to do that respectfully, responsibly, as a church. But for the most part, we've made some pretty clear statements. For us, for my co-moderator and I, we really wanted to be sure to emphasize the diversity of our church. We are a predominantly white denomination, but we are not a totally white denomination. So we really have worked hard in appointing committees for things that the General Assembly voted to do, to make sure that those committees were representative of the breadth of the church. And pointing towards a church we want to be more like. We want to be a church that reflects our communities. And so that means languages, cultures, skin colors, life experiences, orientations, identifications, all of that. We want to be a church that reflects the beautiful diversity of God's creation. So we made a lot of aspirational choices as we invited people into leadership. And that was one of the places of authority where we could make a difference.
So what are other things in the office? Because even those who've grown up in the Presbyterian Church, so I grew up in a Spanish-speaking Presbyterian church. We heard about Presbytery meetings. We'd go to Presbytery meetings. We had, per this aspirational goal, there was some tension there for us because we always felt like we were squatters. We were a part of this larger building, this giant, massive building that was used for worship, and we had a little chapel in it.
Yeah.
And I remember growing up, and all you would ever hear about the predominantly white congregation was, you know, who left the forks out in the kitchen? You know?
Yes.
Please put, and we'd get giant signs, please put back the cups where you found them. And we were always like, oh, you know, they're upset because we know we use the space. But so it was always felt a little bit like a disconnect.
Sure.
So in many ways, I try to explain to people, why don't you know these hymns or all these different things? It's like, well, we didn't really grow up singing hymns.
No.
We grew up singing choruses of a hymn. Mm-hmm. There are some hymns like Holy, 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 Santo,
sure.
Santo, Santo, you would sing in its totality.
Mm-hmm.
But most of the time, you were singing things that were pretty easy for people to remember and teach their kids, and you didn't need words, and
you didn't have enough hymnals
for everybody, right?
Mm-hmm.
So in some ways, it was a Pentecostal meets Catholic expression of Presbyterianism.
Oh, yeah.
So even for me, there are a lot of things that I'm not familiar with what a moderator can actually do. So
sure.
On the one hand, you said, you know, can sort of speak out about things that the church has spoken about. I know the last set of moderators picked a book and said, hey, we want the church to focus on racial reconciliation and kind of look at the lens or look at racism through the lens of our faith. So what are some other things that the Office of Moderator can do besides moderating the meeting and interpreting?
I love the fact that Jan and Denise, the first co-moderators, they started the One Church, One Book initiative, which is so Presbyterian. I mean, we should have started the book club. Should totally have been on top of that. So first, Waking Up White by Debbie Irving, and then they chose Always With Us, What Jesus Really Said About the Poor by Liz Theo Harris. And so we followed in that, and we chose a book called The Neighborhood Church by two Presbyterian pastors, really helping churches move from being the inward-looking, building-focused congregation to actually that's not who Jesus is calling us to be, and how do we move from who we are now to who we are called to be in terms of loving tangibly our neighbors. And so we've been promoting that book and doing workshops on it and sharing that with people as we travel. So one of the things we're tasked with doing is strengthening our bonds with one another, which is one of the reasons why we travel so much. people invite us because evidently there's like we're the cool kids, which is really weird and not at all part of my story. But there's evidently there's this glamour in having the moderator, co-moderator come. But we use that as an opportunity to meet people, to hear about the creative and innovative things churches and worshiping communities are doing, like this one, and then share those stories. But also then make some connections and help people connect the dots between what we are seeing on the ground and what that may mean we need to do in terms of our structure and our practice. Mm. So here's the example. Visiting a lot of smaller member presbyteries. So the presbytery is the regional gathering of churches. And we have regional gatherings of churches that are, you know, 30 congregations spread across an entire state. Well, northern New England, Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, 4 congregations in northeastern Massachusetts. So we have 30 congregations in that area, about 2,500 members. It's not a lot. But it's not uncommon. That's more common than not. So we look at that, we visit the places, and then we go back and say to the larger church, okay, we have a lot of smaller membership churches. We have churches that can't afford a full-time seminary-trained pastor. We have churches where the seminary-trained pastor is a bad fit because of how we train our pastors. It does not compute. It doesn't connect with congregations that are looking for somebody to love them. So, and I shared this challenge at a gathering just last month. Is it time for us to change the way we prepare people for pastoral ministry? If someone's experiencing a call to serve as a pastor, what are the absolute essential things that need to be learned? And what else is just part of our tradition? And how can we shift the way we do pastoral training so that it's not a 3-year residential degree, but instead grapples with the fact that we have people coming second career, third career, they have families, they can't pick up and move, they're rooted to a community. How do we begin to grapple with the changing nature of society and the fact that it's the 21st century and change how we do this really important thing so that our churches are receiving the leaders they need and our leaders who are feeling called aren't burned out before they ever get to their first church. So we have a little bit of room to make those connections and then say to the larger church, we need to pay attention to this. This is what we're seeing. We need to start to have these deeper conversations.
So you get to be out in the field and sort of collect data and then help to interpret that data. So that sounds like so much fun. Just because there's all what we think is happening, and then there's all that is happening.
Exactly.
I was really struck by what you said at Presbytery, which, side note, excursus for all those listening to this, Presbytery is sort of like General Assembly on a very small scale. Things get decided on by representatives from congregations who are elected to be there and share their voice and vote. And we go over business matters, but we also worship together, and we also create these bonds. And you spoke at a Presbytery meeting yesterday. And I remember you said, you know, one of the things I'm surprised by is how wonderful and creative and innovative the things that churches are doing and how little we talk about. So say more about that, because I was struck by that.
You know, for those of us who've been in this church for a while, and really for anyone who follows the news about what's happening with the United Methodist Church, We've been in this period where we have been not very nice to one another and tearing each other apart. And so for years, a lot of our attention and our energy was focused on problems, on declining members, on churches wanting to leave because we were too liberal or not liberal enough. And so all of the conversation, it felt like, and all of the air in the room was about the fight. And it was an important fight for inclusion, for justice, important fight. But in the meantime, we stopped talking about churches that were changing their communities, churches that were seeing needs and saying, well, we don't know how we're going to do this, but you know, we just learned 50% of our kids in the local school can't afford lunch, even the reduced lunch. So we don't know how we're going to deal with that, but we know we need to deal with that. So let's go. And we lost track and lost sight of the fact that there was life-changing ministry happening all across the country. But all we had attention for was the fight. So I'm not surprised that there's life-changing ministry happening. I am saying to the church, what would happen if that's what we talked about? Mm. So if instead of our conversations focusing on, we don't have enough money, we're going to have to cut the budget, we lost some members, you know, our numbers are down, the roof probably needs some work on it, which are all true things, but is that the best place to put our energy? Is that where we want to spend our time? So one of the things I did when I was pastoring the last church I served was I flipped the agenda. You know, every meeting has an agenda. You know, you for religious organizations, you open with prayer. For other organizations, you open with declaring a quorum. And I said, we're going to stop talking about the budget first. We're going to stop looking at the treasurer's report first because we know there's not enough money. We know that there's some bills that probably won't get paid this month. So yeah, let's not talk about that for half an hour at the beginning of the meeting. Right. Let's instead talk about what is the mission that we're being called to do. Let's talk about how we're partnering with the West African community to look for ways to get clean water in their communities in Cameroon. Let's talk about that and give our best energy to that and then deal with the technical stuff that has to be dealt with, but it doesn't need our best brain power.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. I just want to let you know, I'm going to give some pushback on that,
okay,
but not because I disagree. Frankly, I absolutely agree because I tend to be an optimistic person. So I'm naturally optimistic. Number two, I also know my energy and things that are technical and super detail oriented and all about womp. It's like, going nowhere for me. Right. And I feel like so much of our, not even in the church, but even beyond the church, our cultural conversation leans toward the toxic and the negative.
Yeah.
And that being said, I have very good friends and colleagues, and I'll see this whether it's posted on social media and the social media Twitter wars and all these different things, or if it's spoken about at different meetings, where their pushback to this would be, yeah, but that, Edwin, and or in this case, Cindy, you're just positive, and you guys are just optimistic, and you're all like about speaking positively and positive psychology or all these different things, and whether they mean that in a good way or not, but they're like, but what about the real bad, horrible, tragic, sad things, and we've got to talk about those because the church has never really talked about them. What do you say to that?
So that's where our best energy should be. It shouldn't be in declining membership. You should probably edit this out, but so what? If your membership is declining, it's because of the ways you're not being faithful in your ministry, which sounds harsh. But if that's what your focus is on, if any church's focus is on getting more members, they've missed the point. I maintain that our best energy needs to be on the ministry, and that changes based on the context. I mean, we're sitting here in Wilmington, driving through an area of town Friday night. I was told that this there's an area town that's been named Murder Town. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that ahead of time. And the person who was driving me said, you know, we are right at the place where there are shootings on a regular basis. And in fact, if it was a little later at night, we wouldn't be driving through here. Mm-hmm. And then we found out that there actually was a shooting just a couple of blocks from where we had been driving, actually kind of early, like an hour before we were coming through. Mm-hmm. So the context here of gun violence and poverty is something that the church needs to be spending its best energy on, mm-hmm. in my mind. Yeah. I mean, that's what I believe, that if we give the best of ourselves to caring for the widow, the orphan, and the stranger in our midst, which is a biblical mandate, mm-hmm. if we give the best of ourselves to figuring it out what it means to tangibly love our neighbors mm-hmm. in real, substantial ways, the rest is going to take care of itself. Which sounds pie in the sky, but it's been my experience. Mm. When the church I served decided that it was going to welcome immigrants from West Africa and welcome them so that our worship changed and our leadership changed and our fellowship changed, we had to deal with racism in the church. We had to deal with conflict. Why can't they do it our way? Why can't they just be like us? They came here. Mm. Why can't they worship the way we worship?
Yeah.
And the session, which is our church governing body, said, nope, we're going to welcome everybody, and we're going to welcome different ways of being a follower of Jesus. And we lost some members. At one point, there was an active conversation about setting a closing day because there was so much conflict around that commitment mm. to be fully welcoming and not just welcoming on the surface. And we couldn't pay our bills. I mean, literally, we couldn't pay our bills. So it was like, well, so let's not talk about it anymore because we all know we can't.
Yeah.
But because I believe, because we kept our best energy and our focus on, no, we're going to truly be welcoming, the church weathered that time and is a vital, really alive, beautiful congregation. Mm. And before I left, I got to do an immersion baptism in the sanctuary, which for you Presbyterians out there know that's not real normal for us, of a Brazilian immigrant, expanding our welcome. Mm. He had never been baptized. He decided he wanted to join the church, and it was very important to him mm. to be baptized by immersion in November in Massachusetts. Mm. And so since we'd gone through all of that around what it means to be fully welcoming, mm. the session said, okay, let's figure it out instead of we don't do it that way. Mm. Yeah.
Was it in a frozen lake or anything by any chance?
It might as well have been. My husband borrowed a portable baptism, kind of looked like a coffin, actually, from a prison chaplain. And we set it up in the sanctuary over the joists because it's a second floor sanctuary, and had the bright idea, let's fill it with water the night before so it'll come to room temperature. And then we had a freeze overnight, and room temperature was 55 degrees. Yeah, it was really cold water.
Oh, my goodness.
We learned some lessons. Yeah, it was agreed that if that was requested again, we'd fill the baptismal pool right off the water heater next time. Just hook up a hose and snake it into the sanctuary. But,
oh, my goodness.
It was memorable for everybody and a symbol for what mm. the church had fought for.
So do you believe there's a way to talk about toxic issues? So I'm thinking racism. I'm thinking the conversation about human sexuality. I'm thinking about all sorts of conversations in our world. Is there a way to talk about it, talk about toxic issues non-toxically?
Yes. But it's really, really hard. Mm. It's really hard. And one person, at least one person in that conversation, has to be responsible for for being the humble person. Because in order to have a conversation about something that's really difficult, at least one person has to be willing to listen. And to listen in a way that isn't to be able to argue back. It isn't to marshal my arguments while you're talking, so the minute you take a breath, I'm ready to jump right in and tell you all the reasons you're wrong. That's not listening. But to be able to listen in a way that seeks to be curious, even in the face of something you completely disagree with, that seeks to ask questions and understand. If one person can be that person, it can open up a space for respect, and even for some kind of a relationship. And if both people are able to come in with that willingness to attempt the deeper listening and the humility of being willing to learn, then there's the possibility, I think, of moving to new places together. But if we both sit down to tell each other why I'm right and you're wrong, that's toxic.
Yeah.
Even if I am right.
Right. Of course. But of course.
Of course.
I mean, as a pastor, that's something I struggle with, but I feel so strongly about. Having, you know, growing up as, you know, with immigrant parents in a predominantly African-American town and then later a predominantly white town, we experienced racism on both
yeah,
sides.
Yeah, sure.
And the experience of being other and, mm-hmm, and being mm-hmm. sort of not really welcome and belonging. And what I try to tell people is if I try to say, here's the word. Here's the, like this morning's scripture, is, you know, the scandal of the cross, where we're not doing lectionary. We just picked about the wisdom of God.
Okay.
And we said the scandal of the cross is that this is foolish to the world and it's weakness to the world, but it mm-hmm. is the strength and the wisdom of God, which yeah. is stronger and wiser than the strength and wisdom of the world. And I always try to tell people, I am not asking you to you know, be Jesus to everyone. I'm not asking you to go and get crucified. Mm-hmm. I am not asking you to constantly forgive and be reconciled with your oppressor and et cetera, et cetera. That's not what I'm asking you. I believe that if you're not feeling like you can do that, you're not in that space, that that's a journey that you have to, you know, that that's between what God and you are, you know, journeying together. I was like, on the other hand, if you can,
yeah,
if you can,
yeah,
and I believe that's totally by the power of the Spirit.
Amen.
If you can, then Jesus bids us to follow and follow in the way of the cross. And I have found that to be true. Like, again, I wouldn't ask anybody to say, well, what about me? And I felt depressed and I felt hurt. I'm just saying, for me, in seeing how human beings are capable of hurting each other, regardless of their background, if I'm able to take a moment where somebody says something that's racist, where somebody says something that's insensitive, when somebody attacks me, if I can take that moment and say, what do you mean? Let me open this as a teaching moment, as a moment of transformation, and only do that by the grace of God, then there's a path forward. But again, I only do that in the strength of Christ. I don't do it on my own strength. Amen. Otherwise, I'd become really self-righteous, and I would dismiss those who feel like they can't do that at that moment.
Yeah.
So that's something I'm very sensitive about. So I appreciate you sharing your thoughts. Okay, final question.
Oh, okay.
Denominations and denominationalism. We are currently at a United Methodist Church. In this wonderful, creative, collaborative partnership between the United Methodists and the Presbyterians, we have put the Riverfront Church plant at the riverfront. We do things across the city together. Started off as a Presbyterian church plant. It continues to be Presbyterian influenced and supported, but it also has a United Methodist character. We're hiring a woman from the United Methodist Church who will be the only church planting leader in the state of Delaware. So pretty exciting, and she's working on about full inclusion in the denomination. So all sorts of interesting things. What do you see as the future of denominations and denominationalism?
In some ways, that's the $9 million question or whatever amount you want to put on that, that people who work in denominations want to know the answer to. So I guess I'd say two particular things. First of all, that the way we have become denominations, which were has been informed by the corporate model of the 1940s, 1950s, a shift into setting up the church in a very particular business-like model, that we need to move away from that. That, first of all, we're not that large of a church anymore, which I think is a gift from God, really. And that's not who we are. Yeah, there are corporate aspects. Anytime people come together, the corporation is a body, the corpus, and we are the body of Christ. But to rely on the business world for our guidance, I think gets us off on the wrong foot. So that's one piece. I think denominations need to shift how they operate. At the same time, there is... people want to belong, and people are hungry for that. And whether it's belonging to a community that all listens to the same podcast, or belonging to a group of friends that goes down to the local bar, every Thursday night, or belonging to an extended family that has really deep ties, we want a place where we are seen and understood and embraced. And denominations give us that larger structure and protection. Because when people get together, we don't always behave well. Sometimes we behave very badly.
Often
we behave very badly. And so denominations give us both the place where we can gather and the assurance that we will do everything we can to make sure that it is a protected place. We need to change what that looks like. I have no doubt about that. But the basic function of being a larger gathering place for people who are pointed in the same direction, I don't see that going away.
It's institutions, not a popular word. It's not a word we love, but it absolutely is necessary in any organization. So if we want to pay bills, if we want to pay people, if we want to marshal resources, you need some kind of institutional framework. And at the same time, the things we get excited about, like movement, so energy and things coming up, they need organization, and organizations need movements to kind of keep them in check. And what I try to share with people is I'd love to see a time where denominations are strengthened, per how you're saying, but denominationalism kind of begins to weaken, so that it's more about heritage. What does it mean to have a Presbyterian heritage or Methodist heritage rather than I'm Methodist, I'm Presbyterian? And again, if any of our listeners or anyone feels that, well, that is what I am, or, for whatever reason, I'm not taking that away.
Yeah.
But I am saying that the people I'm meeting at the riverfront, that I'm meeting day to day, they're turned off by that. They're sort of, they see that as like, what does that mean? That means I have to sign up to a certain kind of way of being, and as opposed to seeing that as like on a case-by-case basis.
Yeah.
For a certain project, you might need certain kind of organization, but do you always need that organization for all things at all times?
Yeah.
And so people get excited about, hey, let's go help this thing, and there's some excitement about that. At other times, we need more long-term investment, like disaster recovery, right? That's going to need much more organization than, let's say, hey, we saw this need presented in our community. Mm-hmm. No, we don't need a committee. No, we don't need 12 months to talk about it. We need to go and do it. Exactly. Meet me at 3 o'clock,
exactly.
Right? So, so I see there's a tension there and a potential harmony. Mm-hmm. So thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Really appreciate you. And is there any kind of final thoughts, any famous last words you have for us and our listeners here?
Well, I will just share that our next General Assembly is not far from here. So if you're curious, we have open meetings, woo-woo, in the Presbyterian Church. So June 20th, 2020, which is a Saturday, we're meeting at the Baltimore Convention Center for our next General Assembly. And our stated clerk, which is the other highest office in our church, our stated clerk has set the theme as a movement beyond institution.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, look at that.
There you go. So that feels like a lovely closing word.
Oh, but, that's great.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Blessings, traveling mercies.
Thank you.
And I hope you continue to remind us about all that God is doing.
Amen.
And all the exciting things that are happening,
yeah,
rather than focusing on all going wrong in the world. So thank you.
And I hope you continue to see that,
yes,
in your ministry.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And so join us next time in the next edition of the Riverfront Church podcast. God bless you and have a wonderful day.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of Riverfront Church Broadcast. You can connect with us online at riverfrontwilmo.com or on Facebook. Just search for Riverfront Church in Wilmington, Delaware. May God meet you where you are and lead you where you are meant to go.